We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling. Hi, everybody.
I'm Nick Kane.
And I'm Lauren Bailey.
And thanks for listening.
And welcome to Podcast 9.
Podcast 9. Woo! It's been a pleasant one to bring to the masses, hasn't it, Lauren? It's been
a nice experience. But yes, I get your point.
Yes. We did travel to Sydney and we'll talk a bit about that later. But let's get stuck into it, Lauren. How's your month been?
Oh, goodness. Yes. Well, it has been another exciting, busy, busy month.
I wouldn't expect any less from you.
And my story this month is all about balance and specificity.
Ooh, specificity.
Yes, yeah, there's a word for
you. Take us through it.
So I was finishing up my time in LA at the end of podcast 8 and looking forward to coming home to work on things here, with the focus being managing my ongoing daily schedule sustainably. And I had an amazing trip and I came home into the thick of the Melbourne Fringe Festival here. So that was exciting.
Yeah.
But a bit of a light bulb moment for me in the last few weeks, Nick. So I'll take you through it.
Yeah, please do.
Before my trip, things were very busy in my life and I was dealing with that by focusing on just really trying to be present in what was happening now. And also this idea of telling myself, you know, whatever you get done is enough. That was sort of how I was dealing with things. But also with the idea that when I came back from my trip, things would have slowed down and I'd be able to look at my present and my future and more clearly to make decisions
about
what I've been up to.
The assumption that things would slow down is what you're saying.
Yes. Mm. Yes. And this is something I do a lot. I have this idea that in the future, things will slow down and I will thereby be able to take more control of events. Even if that idea of control is illusory. So I'd announced to you and the world in podcast 8 that I was going to focus on the sustainability of my schedule. And then I arrived back in Melbourne and a friend invited me to a screening a few days after I got back, to which I replied, yeah, of course.
Of course.
I can fit that in.
Lauren Bailey's way of going, of course, I'll come along to that event. See you there.
And she said, oh, I thought you were going to slow down. Which made me realise that although, and I'm sure I've said that to her millions of times, I couldn't remember when I'd actually said that to her recently. But nevertheless, it is an idea that I always have in my head. Right now I'm working in what feels like capacity, but in the future I will slow down. And there are two sides to this coin, which kind of explain one of the push-pull struggles in my life at the moment. And the first one is one thing I've been discovering in my life, which comes particularly from the training I did in Bali and the mountain climb, is that we are capable of far more than we give ourselves credit for, which is an amazing thing to feel. And it means that when I am working at capacity, quote unquote, I'm now aware that I actually have other reserves within me that if I need to do more, if the situation requires it, I can call
it. Yep.
Which is great because it means I can push myself even more than I have previously.
Yeah.
So that's
good thing to have in your back pocket.
One side. And then the other side of this puzzle is that I'm always conscious of wanting to slow down of this idea. And it's because I believe that it's important to have balance, to be calm and focused and to enjoy your work, but also have downtime and other areas of your life that bring you happiness per se. At the same time, I don't believe I ever accomplished the idea of slowing down for more than a day or two. And my friend reminding me of my own words made me realise that part of the reason that I don't slow down is because as a goal, that's really quite vague.
Yeah, it is a very vague goal, isn't it? Yeah.
Light bulb moment. Ding. Took me a little while.
Sound effect.
Had to talk to our sound effects guy.
Yeah, it's not very good.
So in the same way that, for example, I want to be a working actor is not a specific enough goal. Well, what time or acting work would you like to do? Theatre, film, TV, web? Who would you like to work with? How much money do you want to make? You know, not a specific enough goal. I want to slow down isn't specific enough either.
No.
What does that really mean? Does that mean I want to rest more, socialise more, garden more, stay in bed more, who knows? Or exercise more, make X amount of money from my part-time job so they can do X, Y, and Z with the rest of my time. And how does whatever I end up defining this idea of slowing down as fit in with the rest of my goals? That's it. That's what I've realized.
Oh, I was on the edge of my seat with that. Because you know what? When you put it out to the world, you were like, I actually put it out to you, I think, the challenge of come back with, you know, a practical way of how you're going to find balance. I think that was a scary challenge for you.
You wanted answers, did you?
But you've come back, and I love this idea of specificity. And I think it's going to tie in really nicely to what I'm going to talk about very shortly for my section.
But I'd love your thoughts, because this is the thing. I've been talking to everyone. We talked to Chintzy about it, but everyone I've been catching up with, I'm saying, you know, this is what I'm thinking about, and you know, getting other people's thoughts on that. Yeah. And obviously, I clearly need to put aside the time to get that specificity, but that's where I'm at.
Love that.
Talk to me.
Well, can I put this idea in your head of enjoyment? Enjoyment.
Yes.
That simple is that I've seen a bit of theatre and a lot of art actually over the past month. I'm still having this very inward focus that I had last month. And that's because I'm going through some changes in my life, which I'm really keen to share with podcast listeners shortly, but until that point, just trust that there's something bigger in my life happening.
Are you pregnant?
I'm not pregnant yet. nor will I ever be. Sorry to disappoint you podcast listeners.
It's been a big month.
That's right. But I did go and watch Q44's Spiked Heels this month.
Yeah.
Spike Heels this month. And The Great God Mogadon. I Don't Look Away. Now, what I loved about these two pieces of works, which are both stunning, both were successful in their runs, was the amount of enjoyment that the cast were having in delivering their work. Now, it seems simple, right? That you should be enjoying what you do. But I think it's something that is often overlooked.
And only having seen, I missed Spike Heels because I was overseas, but I saw The Great God Mogadon at Fringe and loved it. And there was this sense of really seeing the performers relish what they were doing.
Exactly. And this is my point. The audience needs to enjoy the story, and it's integral that you communicate that through your delivery also. It's one in the same.
Yeah.
Now, the first essential ingredient to me in bringing a story is making sure that you enjoy the story. The person delivering it enjoys the story. And enjoyment does not mean a comedic pursuit necessarily. Enjoyment can be darker than that as well. Enjoyment can be, and I'm going to quote here Mary Higgins Clark, who is a suspense novel writer, and she said, "When someone is mean to me, I just make them a victim in my next book." And she loves it because that's her. Now, I mean, it's not necessarily the most...
It is quite dark.
It is quite dark though, right? But enjoyment can come through many ways. You know, it could be catharsis. It can be through anything. There is enjoyment in your work, you know? Yeah. It has to be shown. It's number one.
I actually love what you're saying. I don't know if you were suggesting this as a takeaway for me, but in response to what I've just said.
Yeah.
But this is the other thing that I guess I need to be reminded of at the moment.
Mm.
If my story is my life, I need to enjoy my story.
That is exactly what I was suggesting. And what I'm actually trying to get to with my point as well is that we're both facing this balance idea, but I think we need to now sit down with this idea of specificity and sit down with this idea of enjoyment. And see where they marry up.
Ah, love it. Yes, merging the two of them. And, you know, if we look at things that we have been doing and enjoying this month, you know, we've just been in Sydney.
Yes, we have.
And I think that's a really great example because when we got up there, it gave us time to sit down and talk about the podcast and what we want from it and what we're doing at the moment. And we'll talk about a new segment we've got coming up later.
Yes.
But we also had time to get a feel for Sydney. We saw some art. We wandered into a few galleries.
Yeah. Which is another one I want to talk about, one of the galleries that we did walk into, which was a gallery that was the Ray Hughes Gallery in Surrey Hills.
Oh, yes, down near the Brett Whiteley studio.
That's right, yes. And there was a gentleman in there who was showing his work named Peter Cole. And we walked in, we didn't really know much about Peter when we walked in.
We didn't know anything at all. It was fantastic.
It was. But we also had the opportunity to sit down with Peter and have a quick chat to him. And what I loved about Peter's work, there was this sense of cheekiness to his work. And it was really beautiful, really detailed. And when we actually sat down with him, we actually got talking about how his work comes about. And this idea of enjoyment and acceptance of whatever comes out,
Oh, yes.
And he loves that fact. And he goes, sometimes it's going to be shitty and other times it's going to be great. And I loved it. He had a humour and a freedom to his work that really shone through in what he was doing. So it's this other idea of enjoyment, once again, enjoying what you're doing. And people can see that.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, just to give our listeners some context, it really was chance that Nick and I were like, oh, we've got half an hour. Let's run down and check out these galleries, see if they're open.
Yeah.
And we wandered in, spent quite a bit of time checking out the amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
The exhibition was opening that day.
That day.
So if we'd been there a day earlier, wouldn't have happened. And of course, after we'd finished looking at it all and talking about it all, the gallery staff came over and let us know that Peter was, of course, just sitting over there with his partner, Deb, who's musicians as well. And, you know, so we had the opportunity to sit down to him and talk about the stories that he's telling.
Yes.
And, of course, the exhibition, The Circus of Life, I think really encapsulates, you know, that sense of accepting what comes and the enjoyment of it as well.
And poking a bit of fun at it along the way too.
Yeah, definitely.
We did so much more in Sydney. We actually decided to bring you a podcast direct from Sydney.
With the very, very wonderful Chintzia Coasin, who is just so lovely and insightful. It was a complete joy to talk to her. We do need to let you know that we were a little pressed for time on this recording, so we didn't get to ask quite as many questions as we normally do in our interviews. But it's still amazing, and I think you'll love it. So here goes.
Hello, everyone. Here we are at the beautiful Hub Studio in Chippendale, Sydney. Lauren, how are you going?
I'm very good, thank you.
We've got a very
special guest. And who are we here with, Nick?
We're here with Chintzia Coasin.
Yes.
How are you going?
Hello. Yes. I'm really well, thank you.
Good to see you.
You too.
Why did you choose Hub Studio as your location today?
Look, I chose the Hub Studio because I actually use it as a venue when I'm teaching my workshops. So it's a good space. It's a really welcoming, inviting space for actors.
Yes, we met Natalie before who manage it.
Yeah, they do.
And they're fantastic. And it's such an interesting little space. We saw the little studio cupboard room out the back there. And
little self-tape room.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So good for actors around this area to basically come in and book the space if they need to do a self-tape or anything like that.
Or people who are actually rehearsing a show. So it's used for lots of different reasons.
Beautiful.
They've got voice classes that operate from here. So it's really great. It's a great space.
Fantastic. Well, let's get started off with your story. We'll get you to read your story out for us and then we will fire questions at you.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. I was born in Melbourne and lived there for 8 years. Spent time in hospital learning how to walk again. Lonely nights. 3 years in Alice Springs. Cousins, fun, caves, heat. 9 years in Adelaide, no goodbyes to old friends, only to start again, to move again, this time to Italy for 2 years, to follow my heart. The beginning of a long, long road in a land of constant challenge. Unfinished business, one might say. A suitcase never reopened, still sitting on the shore of an Italian coast. I then made my way back to Australia, back to Adelaide, then to Sydney. Lots of red vino and vodka and lots of new friends. A new life and so many stories to tell. Follow your dream, follow it to the end, and so I did. Move to Sydney, all you have to do is land yourself a roll in a soap and you will love it. And so I did. Well, move to Sydney, not land myself a roll in a soap. I arrived in Sydney with only one chest of goodies, old love letters, clay sculptures, and diaries from my travels. All the things I knew I would need to start my new life. After months of rejection letters, I did eventually land myself a great agent, sending them a cake in the shape of an arm. I'd give my right arm to be represented by them, I said. I then jumped on a train from North Sydney to Town Hall. By the time I had arrived home, they'd already left me a message with an audition time. The very next day, I pulled a few tricks out of my bag and both Martin Bedford and Shirley Pearce looked at each other, then at me, and said in unison, "Welcome to Bedford and Pearce." This is where my story begins.
Beautiful story.
That is so beautiful and so beautifully written. Thank
yeah.
you for
Thank you
sharing,
for sharing
that with
yes.
us.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Raises so many...
It does.
I have so many questions.
I thought we'd start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Let's talk about when you're 8 years old, when you're in Melbourne and you were in hospital at the time.
Oh,
quite a young age, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
What was that like?
I was actually five at the time when I was in hospital.
Okay.
I basically had a cyst growing inwards and they had to operate. And so I was in plaster for a really long time and I was in hospital for a long time and I had to push myself along on this little flat trolley with wheels.
Wow.
And so the plaster was to keep my legs straight so one wouldn't actually grow longer than the other.
Right.
Ooh, wow.
So I still remember the day my dad had to bring in these leather, they said bring in some comfortable shoes for her to start walking again. And he brought in these leather school shoes that didn't bend. And I still remember thinking, these are not comfortable.
These aren't the shoes I wanted.
But anyway, it's all experience. And yeah, it was a fun time. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Even though there was a lot going on, you know. With you physically, it was a fun time.
It was a fun time just in the ward with the other kids. Like, we had a ball. And I think that's what led me back to do the volunteer work I do for the Starlight Foundation, wanting to give something back to the kids.
And feeling it's a bit of a familiar place, that hospital, because, I mean, you would have spent a bit of time there while you were growing up.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. That must have left, really powerful impressions on you.
Of course it did. But still, I mean, it's funny because sometimes it comes back now, but I don't know what it's related to, those feelings,
So you were in Melbourne till you were eight?
Yep.
And then quite a bit of travelling around.
Yeah.
What have we got? Melbourne to Alice Springs to Adelaide to Sydney. What prompted, your family?
Yeah, I think my mum was a bit of a gypsy in that. So every time she kind of thought, she thought to herself, oh, need to move, it's time to move.
Yeah.
And the way it manifests in my life now, I guess, is that I move every 2 years. House,
just
that is. Not state.
How many states do we have?
That's right.
No, just house.
But it is a constant thing where you feel like you want to move. Because it is interesting. By the time you were 21, you'd seen most of Australia, hadn't you?
Oh, yeah. And at the time, I think when I was 21, I actually got a job with a theatre and education company, which actually I toured Australia and metropolitan Australia.
Did you go to my hometown? Did you go to Coondrook on the Murray River?
I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
Probably did. You passed through at
but
some point.
It was great. We performed to clusters of children
fantastic.
It was a terrific experience.
How did that affect your understanding of Australia and I guess your culture personally?
Because I'd kind of spent so much time in Melbourne and then Alice Springs, I saw the diversity of Australia and also understanding the diversity of cultures, I guess, that was already something that was in me.
Yeah.
Travelling allowed me to have moments of rest and then just moments of work.
Yeah, so reflection and work at the same time.
Yeah. So you're giving and receiving.
Without switching off, if that makes sense, because you're not really ever going home. You're always either travelling to
road.
Another space or on the road,
And so the Theatre and Ed tour, was that your first foray into acting?
Pretty much my first professional job, yes.
Yeah.
But before that, I dabbled. Oh, well, 15 years old started.
Yeah. So can we talk about, you said in your story, follow your dream, follow it to the end.
Yeah.
Now, does that reflect specifically your dream of becoming an actor?
Oh, gosh.
You're
going to open a can of worms, are you?
That's what we're here for.
I guess it's more about just being able to... obviously, as actors, you always shift and change and you wear lots of different hats and you... It's more about just being able to be real and not block yourself in any way by saying no to certain areas of the industry. So I guess for me it's more about just getting back into just always being authentic and real and allowing myself to shift into that next space that I'm meant to be into, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
and it's quite interesting. Fantastic. It's one of the things when I did a workshop with you, it's one of the things I noticed about your energy, you know, as well, is that you were very open to sharing with the group and being authentic, and that then drops the guard for the actors that are there.
Oh, of course. And I think it drops your guard as well. As soon as you start to try and be something that you're not, or you don't actually admit to something that you are, you can never really be truthful in that moment.
No, It's not real. Yeah.
Yeah. So you also mentioned the 2 years in Italy following your heart. Is that
is that now the real can of worms opens?
Yes, here's the can of worms.
Is that in the same vein, or is that following your heart in a
romantic way?
A romantic sense.
I did. I followed love to Italy, and then kind of decided that I needed to come back home because I was not following my other heart, I guess. I don't know. Do we have more than one?
Yeah, yeah.
I followed love there,
And would you say you have a strong sense of your Italian heritage? And was that sort of,
because I think that that time... that time there I was absorbed the culture, absorbed the language, and then came back and actually started working for a bilingual company called Doppio.
Teatro?
Yes. You've done your research.
Nick's been practicing his pronunciation.
I was like, how do I say that? Teatro? Did I get that? That's good.
And of course you did the Commedia dell'arte work there.
Yeah, I did that. And I worked for the STC, in conjunction with the STC in South Australia, and then did quite a few tours of another show with them. Yeah, so that was terrific. So my time, I never see anything as wasted time, regardless of where you are.
Well, it certainly doesn't look like that from your CV. I mean, you've got no wasted time at all. So many, a variety of roles in the industry. What have we got? Photographic researcher, hair and makeup artist, actors reader, production coordinator, theatrical actors agent, and there's more. How did you eventually find your way from
using all the
to
well,
all
using...
of those through them and into casting?
I guess so what happened was I had a child. On top of it
on
all.
On top of all that, yes.
On top of all that.
Professional parent.
Yes, so, and that's where I became, I don't know if you, you haven't read the bit about how I'm an excellent cookie maker as well.
I took that out of the story or?
No, I took it out of this story.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so I obviously had a child, I have a son, he's 14 now. Basically, when he was about 3 years old, I started a production company called One Hand Productions because when you're a mum, you've only got one hand to do everything.
Good.
And I started producing short films and started a short film festival in conjunction with Carnivale, the multicultural arts festival. And he basically sat on my lap, you know.
He was the mascot.
Time. Yeah. No, well, his little handprint was the logo. I didn't want to get left behind in any way, so I really kind of... this actually happened after my film was rejected by Tropfest, by the way, and I threw myself onto my bed and said, I'll never get it right, and then decided to start my own.
You've got so many different skills, and it seems like it's an ongoing thing for guests on our podcast at the moment is literally doing a lot. Like,
Diversifying,
correct? The thing is, and we're suffering from this at the moment as well, me and Lauren.
Suffering.
It is a bit like that,
it's
though.
It's a wonderful challenge.
How do you find balance between all these things?
How do I find balance?
Yeah, is there something that you take, like obviously being a parent, number one, but then you've got your job, you know, what your passion, your hobbies, everything come together. How do you find those moments? You were talking about spaces before. Is it finding something in those spaces?
I guess it's you know how sometimes work doesn't feel like work?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like work.
That, yes. That's so, actually, I mean, it's a conversation we had last month's podcast, and Nick and I have been talking about a lot. The challenge, as I see it, is that exactly that work doesn't seem like work. So you end up saying yes to everything because I want to do everything, but you can't do everything. Then up being really stretched, and obviously you want to do a really good job of everything, and I can justify doing it because it's work. But then I think, well,
pace yourself, I guess, and you just do one thing at a time. You don't have to finish everything. There's, you know, they've all got different timelines, haven't they?
Trajectories.
Has there been a time in your life where you've gone, this is too much and I need to prune? Or has there been moments like that?
Only when I actually worked full-time hours.
Yeah.
But I still was absorbing another career while I was doing that as well, when I kind of moved into casting, I guess. And so that was when I was running the most, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was just, you know, living on the other side of Sydney and then driving like an hour and a half, being stuck in traffic every night. I don't know how I did it, but I did it for, you know, 4.5 years.
And the adrenaline just kept flowing for that time? Well,
sometimes you just have to do things. It kind of felt like a combination of needing to be able to, you know, take care of my family and then, you know,
also
have a life outside of that. Yeah.
So you obviously have quite a diverse mix of skills and experience. How do you think that all sort that all comes together in the casting process? Do you feel that all of those things benefit the work that you do in the casting room?
I think so. I think it helps you just be a little bit more sensitive towards actors and you're not so... It's about getting the best results on the day, because the audition process can be quite daunting and can shake a few people up and they walk... You want to make the environment the best environment for them at the time so they do their best work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's just being... being an actor, I guess, has just taught me to identify when someone is what they need to hear at that moment.
Yeah.
Not in a manipulative way at all. Of just a way of just being human.
Understanding.
Giving them a good platform.
Yeah.
What do you love most about being a casting associate?
I just love meeting actors. I actually really love the process. And I think that's because I miss it in some ways.
Yeah,
so I really... And that's why I love the workshops as well. I get to really throw myself in. Which is great.
And be around actors. That's the beautiful thing. And that energy, isn't it? Yeah, that creative energy.
Mm-hmm.
So casting directors and associates often have a certain level of mystique around them. So it's things like low level of online presence, not affiliating with actors necessarily. Can you talk about that enigma and why it's there? And also... why do you think it's a necessary thing? Is it a necessary thing? It's a big question, isn't it?
It's a big question. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I can't answer that question on behalf of every casting person in Australia. Obviously, I don't feel that way, so it's really hard for me to address it. I look at people on a different sort of... Yeah. It's different for me, so I don't...
So you think it's individuals that choose their level of distance or...
Yeah, I look at it more from that perspective and as a whole rather than... For me, it's about being human, and if people don't... If you're actually not vibrating on the same frequency, that's what pulls you apart. It's not about what you do or who you are or where you live. It's more about where you're meant to go at that moment in time, and that shifts and changes all the time.
Can we just talk about the work that casting work you've done in the US? You are now a veteran of 4 US pilot seasons, is that?
Yeah, probably 4 or 5.
More or less, right? Yep. Creating work for the NBC with Camp and even HBO with Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in working over there?
Well, basically, I didn't work over there. It was here in Australia working
over there. Yeah.
So I guess it's just who I work with and basically the clients that they have, so that it's more about where I am at this time in my life.
And do you feel like there's... You know, do you feel like there's some main differences between the Australian and the US industries?
Yes.
Yes. Can we talk about those?
Oh, you have to do my next workshop.
Good. Good. And when is that happening, by the way?
November the 1st and 2nd here at the Hub.
All your years of casting, have you got a work that you hold on a pedestal, what you think is the most important you've done or that you're very proud of?
It's really funny. Someone has asked me that question before and I didn't know how to answer it.
Is it like choosing
Because it's not my decision, you know, I'm part of a process.
Yeah.
And so you can't... I mean, part of the process.
Yeah. Okay.
But so it must be exciting to watch a project that you've been involved in the casting for and see people backed.
Of course. Yeah. Most of them, all of them. I'd say it's exciting to watch...
Yep. Now, just coming back to the US-Australia question, which I understand I need to do a course with you to answer sufficiently, and that's fine, but I'm just really interested. I've just been over in LA and doing a lot of research and listening to a lot of US casting directors who talk about, particularly when they're casting for pilot season, how they're looking for longevity in characters, how an actor auditions now, but thinking, well, how will that character change over the arc of the show, and really sort of having a long range view in mind. Obviously, Australia is a minor... Australian shows, we're in a minor industry. If you're casting for here, where a show is perhaps less likely to get past 1 or 2 seasons, do you still cast with any sense of that, or can you talk about that a bit?
I think a lot of this happens in the writing, so it depends on what you're getting from the writer and everyone involved.
They would give you the direction for that, see that in the work.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. That's where you see it first up, in the writing.
So we obviously have a lot of actors that listen to the podcast. The dreaded actor's headshot. Have you got any helpful hints, tidbits that you like to share to the wider acting community about what you like to see in a headshot?
Yeah, I think it's just keep it simple and don't make it too specific. So don't kind of like, you know, wear really heavy makeup and wear a leather jacket
and that's your only look.
So just keep the look very plain and simple.
Right.
Just simple. Plain's not even the best word. Keep it simple.
Mm. And what about if it was a particular role, you'd be open to see multiple headshots as well, or would you lead with a shot that's more character based, or would you prefer just the actor naturally?
I think the actor naturally, because when they walk in the room, that's what you want to see. Yep.
And when they walk in the room, have you got any advice for the audition process itself?
I think it's just get to know yourself as well as you can, because that's all you can do, just be yourself. You start putting something else on. I mean, we're all human, we can see that immediately. So it's about understanding what makes you tick. And I think this is a really important thing for a lot of actors or anyone in the creative industry. They should really take on board, and that is just remembering their value. So if you bring balance into the situation, you'll always know what sort of value you're bringing to the situation. It's not about what they always have to offer, but it's also what you have to offer.
Yeah.
And then if you can really kind of, I don't know, get to a point where it isn't just about them, it's also about you. You wouldn't be there if it wasn't about you.
And it's a level of confidence, I guess, you get from that as well.
Yeah, being playful and just remembering the reason why you're doing it in the first place, why you love it. And that's what I really, I kind of try and instill in everyone that comes to my workshops. It's about remembering that, because once you remember that, it doesn't matter who is in the room.
One of your many roles that you've been involved with is at Vision Infinite Potential.
Oh gosh, so many years ago.
I know, but it's an interesting one, because you were part of a program called Heart of Drama.
And oh no, that what that was? Oh yes,
yes, yeah. Yes. No, I was like, well, I'm pretty sure my research found that.
Oh my gosh, that's with Faith Martin.
Yes. It was basically around this idea of individuals harnessing their creative potential. Am I correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So how important do you believe that is? Like a positive mindset in your artistic lifestyle in general?
It's the most important, I think. And that's why I say get to know yourself.
Yeah.
Get to know what makes you tick.
And be comfortable with who you are.
Yes.
And you were in the workshops with a couple of those, weren't you? So you were
facilitating. I did a couple of breakthrough experiences, which is based on John DeMartini's work.
Yes.
So you're also producing some of your own work at the moment.
Correct.
Yes.
Well, basically what I want to do with the workshop, my overall plan, I guess, in the end is with my workshops, the overall plan is to pump money back into the industry. Yeah. So all the projects that I started writing and put on the shelf, 5-10 years ago, I can bring them back. And then hopefully eventually what I'd like to do is then start producing my own work and seeing that happen. So that answers a question for me,
because I was going to say your story is so beautifully written. You obviously...
There's a bit of writing there.
You obviously have some writing skills in there as well. So you're also producing some of your own work at the moment, and you've mentioned to us two pieces in particular that you're working on. One is an original TV series, 56, and the other is a feature, Holy Moselle. Can you talk to us about, you know, the origins of them and what's... I imagine you don't want to tell us all the details, but, you know, give us something to go on.
Well, Holy Moselle was actually written by my sister Michelle Coasin. And she it's based on four girls that live together in Tamarama, and I think that's all I'll tell you about that one.
Yes.
Okay.
a fun story, a light story, which I'm looking to kind of pump some money into myself once I get my workshops happening.
Yeah.
So just really kind of give back to the industry.
Yeah,
the other one needs obviously a lot more time and work, and 50, which is 56, that's based on my mother's family. So she has 14 brothers and sisters. So it's
Wow.
Big story.
Big story. Yeah.
So it sounds like you have a bit of quite a bit of creativity in your family too.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think that's where my storytelling began, just with them, the way they told stories and the way my mother told the same story over and over. She'd make me cry and laugh, like, you know, within seconds. So that's where it started.
So that's interesting. So I guess if we go back, and I'm starting to see a little bit of a theme here, what do you think good storytelling is? What do you think the elements of good storytelling are? I feel like authenticity is a part of it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And to know what you're talking about as well. If you if it comes from your heart, then you can never go wrong.
Mm.
Yeah. If you believe in it, if you're driving something, you have to believe in what you're driving.
Mm.
And that's what I that's one of my
it's one of, it's your motivation too to tell stories,
isn't it?
Yeah, I guess
that is my motivation. Yeah. If something doesn't mean anything, I mean, the whole story behind One Hand Productions, it's because my son was sitting on my lap as I made that happen.
Yeah, so family sounds really important to you too.
Yeah, it is. It's huge.
So we've just got time for a few last questions, but I do want to ask, you know, you're casting, producing your own work, doing some writing at the moment. You said that you miss acting. Do you think there's room for more acting in the future? Or is that something that you're open to at the moment?
I don't know. I just know that I'm on a path, and obviously everything that we do, everything that we are doing is preparing us for what's going to happen next. So, you know, a month from now, I might have a completely different perspective on things, but right now I know that I can see my workshops are leading me to something that is going to then open up a new world for me.
And who's inspiring you at the moment? Do you have anyone in particular that's inspiring you?
I've had so many storytellers inspire me, but I can't...
So one that's been really influential in your life that just comes to mind? You can say Nick Cain, that's fine.
There is someone.
Even if you really mean Lauren Bailey.
It was an amazing woman that I met so many years ago who was probably so many people. I've got so many women that have been really important in my life that have inspired me. But one of my mentors, I guess, I don't see much of her anymore, but she inspired me with her story. Her Australian story, and you want her name, don't you?
No, well, I mean, that whole statement is intriguing. Yeah. Her Australian story, you know, you could...
Well, that's the first story that I started helping her with to try and get off the ground, and then she started helping me with my film festival, and
fantastic.
It was like an exchange, and that's what I really believe in. We all have to support each other for that, you know, during...
And how important do you feel that the role of a mentor is, like, to seek someone out?
It is so important, and I think sometimes half the time you don't even realize the people in your life are mentoring you, and that's the most. It's almost like you're being groomed for something.
Groomed for life.
Yeah. And so they do it in such a gentle way, and this woman did. She was a lot older than I. And I do miss her as a person, but what I can see now, all the things that she did for me.
It's quite amazing, isn't it, how you can find these people in your life. It's like a magnetic force that come into your life. We were talking to Oliver and Natalie just before about how this place has created, Hub Studios, has created this almost magnetic field of actors coming together to do something that everyone's supporting everyone. And that's important, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Vibrating on the same frequency, man.
and also that the answer to what we all want to do relies on that sense of community. We'll never get there alone.
No.
And that's the really exciting thing about it. So what advice would you give to, I was going to say someone starting out in the casting industry, but given that you have such a diverse array of skills, what advice would you give someone starting out in the creative industry, whether it be as an actor or producer?
Follow your dream. And sometimes you end up in suburbia, but you know what? It's all part of the story. It's part of your story.
Yeah. And use that too. That's a part of who you are, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So we've got a bit of fun for the last question. This is the last question of the day. If your hopes for the future were set out like casting notes, what would you be looking for? What do you want from the future is a basic way of saying
basically
that.
Just to run my own operation where I've got... I know exactly what I want to do, but I'd probably need to get you to sign a confidentiality agreement.
Cool. So we'll stay an enigma for now.
No, it is... Yeah. I know exactly what I want to do. And it is about pumping money back into the industry, producing projects, empowering actors, and having them learn lots of different skills in the process so they don't actually feel themselves stuck all the time. So it's sort of, that's my big plan, and I'm taking steps to get there. So.
And with this sort of worldview that you seem to have of, you know, think you finding things and things finding you at the right time, do you feel that you're quite, you say you know exactly what you want, is that just something that gradually becomes clearer and clearer to you, or do you feel like you've had some really big goals for a long time that you're slowly moving closer towards that are becoming clearer?
I think I had big goals, and then what happened, my life started to take over, like, and that's how we learn and become. Yeah, and so basically I actually lost my dream for many years and thought I would never find it again, and I found my way back there. And so I think that now that I'm doing the clearing, I'm clearing stuff in me and changing old beliefs and just a belief system and definitions that I have, I'm shifting a lot of that, and the more I shift that, the more clear it becomes for me. And all the little things that used to get in the way don't sort of get in the way anymore. The distractions don't get in the way anymore. If that, I can say,
you
separate it so that you can see when something is a distraction and you're using it. It's a drama that you're creating as a distraction, and it's getting in the way of you actually, you know, moving closer to what, you know, your result.
It's about being honest and truthful with yourself.
Getting to know yourself, doing the therapy.
Doing the therapy.
Yeah, doing the therapy, because I tell you what, once you get the role,
I think what happens in Australia
what happens is that we get that role and we go, oh, this is good therapy, man, and I'm going to work out all this stuff. But you should work out all this stuff before you get there, because that the blockages get in the way. And then you kind of, it gets confusing, and there's really kind of hazy lines about what, I think that if you do the work out of the room, and then you can apply yourself better to the other work that you get. Yeah, work really, on yourself out of the room.
I really like that idea of clearing yourself out, you know, that idea as actors or whatever type of artist, you know, we just channel something, and the clearer you are, the clearer that work will be, and easier and more enjoyable.
Well, exactly, yeah. And I think also sometimes we have a belief system that comes from generations before us that is just in our DNA. Now I'm really sounding out there, aren't I?
No, we love it.
It's a truthful point. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Have you enjoyed it? How have you enjoyed the process?
I've had a terrific time. Thank you so much for inviting me. I hope I answered all my questions properly.
I know people are very excited about this podcast. So
oh, really?
Thanks for joining us.
And we're very excited to have you. Yeah. So. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
See you at the reunion.
Can I just say thank you so much for coming all the way to Sydney. I know you've probably got other plans while you're here, but wow.
Yeah.
Well, you guys put on some beautiful weather for us today.
Yeah, it's been perfect.
Yeah, it's been pretty lovely.
Yeah, good. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, that was so exciting.
It always is, isn't it? A new perspective.
I know. I just love, by the end of the podcast, I'm literally brimming over. Yeah. Every podcast, I'm
so much
kind of out of my seat.
What did you take out of it?
I think for me, the main... there were lots of things that mm-hmm. I got from that interview, but I really like this idea of... It's something I think about a lot in my own life, this idea of your personal vibration. Mm. And I can't remember Cynthia's exact words, but when you're in a casting room, you know, your vibration with that other person, if it's not there, it's not going to work, and don't worry about it, you know. But just, so for me, the takeaway from that is just go in and be open and
trust. And
bring,
and
trust what you bring in.
Correct. It's a unique vibration.
And I also, you know, you talk about the enigma, your question about the enigma of the casting associate or director, and you know, to actors, I often, they seem quite scary to me. The idea of people in casting can seem a little intimidating. And then I always meet people in casting and they are so lovely and they care so much about what they do. And
well, that's why I really wanted to
those
ask
Those are all of my takeaways. Sorry,
yeah, well,
a lot
knowing
there.
Cinzia, that's why I wanted to ask the question, right? Because she doesn't seem like that at all.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see whether she had a view on that. And as she said, she goes, I can only speak for myself, but I don't see that. Yeah. So that's a great
What about you? What did you get?
I think this idea, and it kind of leads into your vibration idea as well, but clearing the path, being honest and truthful to find, I guess, who you are as a person and let that shine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you can do that. And as she said, she finds that the more and more she does that, the more and more things start to work
out. To come in.
Yeah. And it becomes a clearer focus for her about what she's doing with her life and where she needs to go. So, you know, we'll take all that in.
Yeah. I don't know where to go from there, but I have a lot to think about, which is a good way to end a podcast interview.
There it is, podcast 9, Honest and Authentic Soul, Cinzia Coasin.
Ah, fantastic. And we did talk to her a bit after the interview. We had to get out of the recording studio, but we talked to her about all sorts of things.
So many things. One of the things she did want to mention to actors is making sure that you are prepared when you're walking into the audition room. It is vital to remember. What else did she talk about, Lauren?
There was quite a bit of continuing discussion around this idea of schedule. She's clearly up to heaps.
She's a busy person too.
And so how she manages her workload at her end. And just one thing I want to mention is that she talked about how she's sort of clearing space in her life for new stuff to come in. Also this idea that when she is having downtime, to get around this idea that we have about being lazy and actually look at downtime as a really important activity that you need to have so that you can fill in your grid.
Yeah. I mean, there's important work by a guy named Dr. Adam Fraser, who in his book, which we actually placed on our social media about a book that you should check out for life balance, he talks about the word lazy having negative connotations when it shouldn't. The word lazy actually is part of life. And the fact is that sometimes you do need to recharge and you do need to be lazy.
Yeah.
And allowing yourself to be lazy at times is completely within the bounds.
And that time actually, it not only gives you rest, but also time to reflect and process stuff to continue your journey. So I just wanted to mention that because I love that idea that she brought up.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, if we had more time with Cinzia, it would have been great. But just the fact of the matter that we had that beautiful, you know, 35 minutes with her was
golden. We didn't remember to ask about the cake, that fantastic cake she made.
Yeah, I'd give my right arm, wasn't it? And she sent a cake.
To be represented by by her agency, yeah.
Yeah, well, she can obviously bake because they took her and act.
And, of course, she can also teach. She does a lot of teaching.
she can teach.
We talked in the interview about her next class that's coming up in Sydney, but, of course, she's got one coming up in Melbourne.
Yeah, it's the 26th of October at the Melbourne Actors Academy in North Melbourne. There's still spots available if you want to jump onto the Melbourne Actors Academy website and book your tickets. Go right ahead. Lauren, your month, what's it bringing?
Well, it's going to continue to be busy. No surprises there, but exciting. And I'm about to start shooting for ETK, which is the feature.
That is exciting.
Yes, that I've talked about in podcast 8. And I'm also doing the upcoming masterclass with Carol Rosenfeld from HB Studios in New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's on at 16th Street the week after next. So I've got quite a bit of work to do continue to do for both those projects, but really exciting stuff. And in and around that, I'm obviously going to continue my quest to make my life balance goal more specific.
Yes, good. Get a bit of lazy in there, will you?
I'll do my best. Bit of enjoyment.
That's it.
And I'd like to do a quick shout out. I know we'll have recommendations coming up in a second, but just before we do, on Friday night, I went to the 48-hour film festival final screening that was on at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image. And I was so proud to be there to see a great bunch of films, but also to support the very lovely and talented Andrea McKinnon, who won Best Actor for the festival in a short film by herself and Yut Art called Mr. and Mrs. Death. So congratulations to Andrea.
Congratulations. Awesome. And I did see the award on Friday night. It's quite spiffy, isn't it? It was like a light box. It was beautiful.
She kept turning the light off and I just kept turning it back on.
Turn that light on. Shine for the world.
What about you, Nick? What's coming up for your month?
My month's going to be all about a digital facelift. So I'm going, yeah, I know, not an actual facelift, a digital facelift. So all the touch points that I've got from my acting perspective, so whether it be my website, social media elements, I'm looking to really give them a bit of a facelift. It has been a while, so I feel like it's a little bit dated. As well as that, I'm going to pull my voice over reel together, finally.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so I've got enough there, and I have a little spot on my website that says voice reel coming soon, which has been like that for a very long time. So it's a little bit of a lie that coming soon, but it is probably coming soon now.
A bit like our website.
That's right, exactly. But that's the plan. I'm looking to get that stuff in order, and I'm looking forward to sharing with all the storytellers out there next month the big exciting plans for what I have
for your future.
In store.
Yes. Great.
We will know more next month.
Looking forward to I'm on the edge of my seat now.
Recommendations, Lauren? Have you got some recommendations for this month?
Oh, I do. Actually, I have a bit of a different recommendation this month.
Mm-hmm.
But very much in the vein of telling great stories, I purchased the Penguin Classic copy of, by chance, Another Country by James Baldwin. Mm. So I went into the airport bookstore and was like, oh, that looks interesting. It's set in Greenwich Village, New York in the 1950s, and I got that to read on the plane and while I was overseas, and I've now finished it. The novel covers many themes that were taboo at the time of its release in the 60s, including bisexuality, interracial couples, extramarital affairs. It's clearly not an Australian story, but then obviously we can be inspired by stories from all over. And I just want to mention it because I think it is a fantastic example of great storytelling. I know we talked to Tom Meadmore in podcast 8 about this idea of, we're talking about music at the time and how music can often convey stories and moments in time that words can't express.
Yes.
And I completely agree with our discussion at the time. But something I noticed about this book, the author just manages to create these characters that I could understand and relate to their experiences, which are completely different from my own life. But like I was experiencing them myself, and it made me think about that conversation we'd had with Tom. And more so than other stories I've read, I haven't thought about this actively before, but I really did feel like so many times things were explained that I've never heard explained that succinctly.
And it fleshed out the other senses for you, so it wasn't just literally words on a page anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my recommendation.
Ooh,
I don't
I have
know
to have a read.
For anyone who's up for a good read, that is my recommendation.
Another Country by
James Baldwin,
very
and just
nice.
Fantastic storytelling.
I have a recommendation, Lauren, from our recent trip to Sydney as well. There was a little theatre in Cleveland Street in Redfern, 199 Cleveland Street in Redfern, that was called Giant Dwarf.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Now, I don't know if you know the origins of this, but it was originally run by the Chaser Boys. Well, it is still run by the Chaser Boys. And Giant Dwarf actually refers to Andrew Denton.
Oh,
that's what they call Andrew Denton. That's their nickname
really?
For Andrew Denton. So it's a beautiful little theatre with just a simple little alleyway as an entrance out the back of a bigger building. But it has some great storytellers, some great opportunities.
Yeah, they have some fantastic storytelling events on there.
Correct, yeah. Some great opportunity to go and see some different events too. They created the space in the grander hope, they say, that by creating a home like this for other like-minded performers, some kind of cross-fertilization would occur that would be valuable to the creative pool of Sydney.
Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah. So if you get an opportunity and you are in Sydney, 199 Cleveland Street, Redfern, and go and see some great works at Giant Dwarf, which is all on their website if you want to have a look at the events. Talking of websites,
yes.
We've got a new one coming.
Woohoo!
www.theactofstorytelling.com.au. That will be the new website. It will be much more functional than the one that we've currently had.
You'll actually be able to see previous podcasts and their links, which have been missing for some time. So apologies for that.
But good to have it coming, and we hope you enjoy it.
And also, keep an eye out for our new segment, Storyteller Snapshot.
Yeah.
It's the catchy title, which will be coming to the interweb soon.
Are we allowed to say anything about it, Lauren, or...?
Oh, I don't know. Well, how to pitch this? Okay, well, we sat down with Dave Harrison from the King's Collective while we were in Sydney to talk to him. And we've mentioned them as the King's Collective as one to watch on the podcast before. They've just finished three amazing shows for the Fringe Festival. So, yeah, we'll want to leave a little bit of a surprise for you, but it's...
But it's a supplement. It's a supplement over and above what is our general podcast.
Yeah, it's just another facet of storytelling that we want to try to provide.
Lovely.
And of course, anyone who wants to check out Peter Cole's work this month, The Circus of Life is on at the Ray Hughes Gallery in Sydney till October 28th, and we both loved it. And if you do go and see it, please let us know what you thought.
Yeah.
Because we really dug it.
And until that time, you can find us on the usual channels, which are obviously the new website now. The About Me site will still work, about.me/the act of storytelling, albeit in a subdued form. The Facebook will be there, Twitter, SoundCloud and iTunes. Search The Act of Storytelling and give us your feedback. As Lauren said just before, we are really, really happy when you give us feedback on what you're thinking, what you're feeling, anything about this podcast. Do let us know and we will announce a new storyteller very shortly.
So continue to join us on The Act of Storytelling.
Thanks for listening.